Good morning.
Good morning.
It is absolutely surreal to be standing here speaking on the stage. Really. I mean, I am a witness as to, I'm an example of where your higher power can take you, if you're willing. I mean, I just never dreamt that I would be speaking in Unity. All the years. I mean, I started coming to Unity when I was on the east side of the hotel and this movement center for many years in this space, and I just never, ever even thought about it. Here I am. Never thought I'd write a book. Oh, thank you. I never thought I'd write a book. I've had, for years, I had friends say, Alton, you're a writer. And I was like, me? Maybe in another lifetime. I don't have time. I don't know anybody more impatient than I am. But my life led me to, like, that was the best way that I could share. And you just never know if we are willing to open. Do me a favor and look to your neighbor on your right, which is the man. Now look to your neighbor on the other side and wish them a happy Father's Day as well. Thank you, happy Father's Day. Now, please put your hand over your heart and say happy Father's Day to yourself. You know, we're a combination of both parents. You know, some of mom, some of dad, and hopefully a whole lot of us. It takes the time at some point to figure out what we can use, what we can do without, what we want to make our own, and we learn to parent ourselves. I always start my talks with the impossible dream because it's a recurring theme in my life. Seemingly impossible dreams that have come true. Like this one. It's a dream I didn't even know I had. And, you know, through lots of work, I was able to create space for it, and here I am sharing this way. And I bet each and every one of us in this audience, if we took the time to really think about it, we could see there's so many seemingly impossible dreams that have come true for all of us. So on that note, we're gonna do a little gratitude meditation together. So get comfy in your seat. First thing we're gonna do, the first thing is, I want you to raise your shoulders as high as you can, as much as you can, squeeze it in, and then just let them drop. Let's do that again. Squeeze, and then let them drop. I'm a yogi, you know. And many people say, oh, yoga, I should do yoga because I'm not flexible. Yoga is really about mental flexibility and breathing. I mean, how many times do we find ourselves in difficult situations and we forget to just breathe? We get into an argument with somebody because somebody's trying to project something onto us, and we feel that need to defend ourselves, when if we'd just taken a breath, we might not have said that thing that we can't take back. We might not have defended something that was not our business anyway. But sometimes taking a simple breath, you can go, wait, this isn't my business, this isn't about me. And we can just detach and not take the bait. So in yoga, we tense our muscles, and then we release them so that fresh oxygen carries so much tension in our shoulders. Next, I want you to get comfy and put your hands on your eyes right here. Open to receive. We're going to do a little breathing exercise. So we're going to count to five. We're going to do a slow inhale on five. We're going to hold it for three. We're going to release for five. And think of those same principles. It's like tensing up, holding, and then letting all go. Elongating. You ready? Okay. So inhale. One, two, three, four, five. Hold it. Two, three. And release with an two, three, four, five. Close your eyes, please. Do it one more time. Inhale on five, and inhale, two, three, four, five. Hold it, two, three, and release it. Two, three, while you're there, I want you to just go back. Go back in your mind, in your own personal experience. Go back to around June 17th of last year. And just think for a few seconds about where you were in your life. And let's put the focus on seemingly impossible dreams. What seemed impossible just a year ago? What seemed impossible that has come true in this past year? Maybe it's a new job. Maybe it's a new position. Maybe you've gotten engaged over the past year. Maybe you've become pregnant. Maybe you've had a child. Maybe you've graduated. Maybe you've gotten married. These are dreams that have come true. I know we tend to focus on the really big things, but there's a lot of little bitty things that happen every day that we tend to just kind of skip over. I'm talking something simple like you're running late, and you need the train to be right on time to get to work on time, to meet that appointment, and it's there. You go down to this little subway stairs, and the train's right there, and you get there on time. Those things happen to us all the time. They happen for us all the time. But how much time do we take to acknowledge them? A lot of us go, okay, the train came, I got to work, moving right along. Those are little bitty miracles that if we focus on them, can change our lives, they can change our perception of everything. So just think about some of the small things. Weddings, anniversaries, those are big, huge things. But let's think about some of the little bitty things. You're trying to get to an appointment. You're uptown, trying to get downtown. And you get in a taxi that knows the side streets and you get to that appointment on time. That's some miracle. That's something that you're hoping for when you're panicked, sitting in the taxi going, man, I kind of want to do this trap in New York City, and you get there. This is also why I think rituals are important. Honoring, because it's so easy to forget that we get so much of what we do ask for. Not just the huge things, but the small, everyday things. The ordinary things. Most of life is ordinary. Most of life isn't challenging, dramatic, or triumphant. A lot of it's gray, ordinary. That's okay. That's real. Let's all take a deep breath. Five. Hold it. Two, three, and release it. Two, three, four, five. Hopefully tapping into some of those things makes you smile. We have a lot of little bitty dreams that have come true. It's a great thing. So now let's just come back to the present. Service and gratitude has become a big part of my life, a big part of my work. It's what helps keep me grounded. Not taking things for granted. Ritualizing some of those small things. Like for me, if I do have one of those days where, like, even an audition, yeah, I don't know if I'm gonna book it, but I did work, I rehearsed, I studied. I can't control the outcome, but I can control what I put into it. So I reward myself. So even though, you know, I've gotta have lunch someplace, this lunch is in honor of my work. It's self-validating. That way you're not leaving yourself at the mercy of somebody else. Impossible dreams, as I said, have been a major, major theme with me in my life. I'm going to take you on my journey. My talk is about tapping into and acknowledging the Father within. And I want to share with you my journey toward that. I am from Cincinnati, Ohio. You! The youngest of seven kids, five girls and two boys, a brother who never lived with us. It's another story, it's another book. So it was like having six mothers, basically. Six really wonderful mothers. And it was challenging in my household because the only other person who looked like me in the house was my father. And I was in competition with him and the bottle. And as a kid, I spent many, many hours trying to figure out why does he not seem to like me? Why does he want to spend any time with me? And as kids, you know, we don't have the language to really identify our feelings. It's just feelings. You know, I'm looking at this person going, I know there's a relationship that's supposed to be happening here, and there's things I need from you, and I don't quite know how to get it, so since you're not volunteering it, it must be my duty. It's my job to figure those things out. Which led to lots of codependency. I mean, the whole family, you know, we all kind of like danced around my father, hoping that if we were quiet enough or obedient enough, that he would drink. Just not knowing. So my big escapes, well, first my first impossible dreams were simple as, how am I gonna make it out of public housing and make something of my life? When so little seemed to be expected of me as a young black boy. How was I going to overcome my shyness? I was extremely shy. I mean, like, afraid to raise my hand and give the right answer, kind of shy. And how would I ever find my voice? Learn how to speak up for myself and ask for what I wanted. School was my savior. I loved school. You know, when I came home from school and opened the door, I didn't know what to expect. Would my father be sober? Would he be drunk? Would I have to tiptoe around? Would he be friendly? You know, my father was the kind that he wasn't drinking. He was very, very quiet. He was glued to the TV. He was sitting in his chair that no one else was allowed to sit in. He was eating from his tray that no one else was allowed to use. He was the king. I never knew what to expect at school.
Just a minute.
Okay. I definitely want you to hear me. There we go. Yeah.
A little technical.
Thank you.
Better?
Yeah. Better?
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. But I love school because there was order there. You know, if I showed up on time, if I did my assignments, I got good grades, I got validation. It was my first big validation I got. And teachers loved me because I was obedient. Kids, another story. You know, it was tough being a nerd in the projects. You know, being a smart kid wasn't really cool. You know, and as much as I loved my teacher's validation, as a kid, you just want to be alone. You just want to be a part of the group. And I could never fit in with them. I tried to be a bad kid, it didn't work for me. And I have a kind of karma in this lifetime. If I do something, it comes right back immediately. So it's like, oh, okay, I just won't even try that. Yes, not this lifetime. And as a kid, it felt like I was being tortured. Like, why do I have to be so different than everybody else? You know, I was already an artistic kid. You know, I was the kind that, like, if I heard a certain song on the radio, remember, touch me in the morning. I would hear this song on the radio and burst into tears. I'd be like, really? Why am I that kid who cries at songs, you know? It was not cool. It was not cool to them, it was cool to me, but it's not cool. So school is where I got a lot of validation. I love the order of school. And I also had two good friends that no matter what was going on in my life were always there for me. Didn't have a lot of friends in the projects because I was bullied, and I went to school with these same kids, so I couldn't get away from them. But our two buddies were the radio and the television. Now my family always listened to the radio station that played all kinds of music. We listened to, of course, the Motown sound, but you know, pop, rock, jazz, country, easy listening. You know, Elton John, Billy Joel, Gordon Lightfoot. You remember when like John Denver and Helen Brady were considered pop music?
Yes.
Music has really changed, right? And even now, I could be driving in a car with a friend, and they're like, how do you know the words to all these songs? And I'm like, these are the songs that I grew up listening to. These are songs that I sang along with and taught myself how to sing. At least I think I was singing. I think I was harmonizing. I didn't know that I could sing, but I loved the sensation of singing. It made me happy, it made me feel good. And nobody in my family knew that I sang. I always sang in silence. So even now, when my family comes to see me, and they come to see me and everything, they're like, dude, like, wow, like, where's this been? Like, where were we, you know? It's pretty interesting. And I also never, ever thought, ever, I mean, a true impossible dream. This is one of the reasons why I start my talks with the impossible dream. And normally not with such a fantastic band as we have here. Isn't this band fantastic? I normally sing it a cappella to remind myself that it's not always been easy for me to sing in front of someone. It's not always been easy for me to share what God has given me. My other good friend was TV. And I'm so blessed that as a kid, talent shows, variety shows were on TV. You know, not talent shows like American Idol or America's Next This and That. You know, these shows were to make you happy and for fun, to put a smile on your face. You know, the Sonny and Cher hour, that Sullivan show, laughing. Oh, man. And for me, groundbreaking, the Flip Wilson show. I mean, it was tremendous for me as a young black kid to see this man who looked like me with his own successful show. And that's how I learned to speak well and pretend that I was being interviewed. And again, these things were not cool in the projects. You know, try cussing, you know, saying a bad word and pronouncing every syllable. You know, wasn't really cool, you know? But all of those things together, all of my TV and my radio heroes, my teachers, you know, they helped me to make my ultimate dream come true, being on Broadway. And six incredible Broadway shows. Thank you. And the latest one being King Mufasa, 4,308 times. Wow. You know, people often ask me, like, how did you do it? How did you do so many performances? Not just The Lion King, because I was known for not just two shows. And I said, you know, a lot of things, passion, discipline, you know, gratitude for being a working actor, for doing what I love to do, for being paid well to do what I love to do. You know, different levels of gratitude. So if a couple expired, I always had something to fall back on that had to do with gratitude, gratefulness. So, you know, I've had a blessed life, blessed career, lots of hard work. But you know, a lot of my career, there was like a hole in my space in my heart, like a feeling that I couldn't quite put a name on, like an emptiness. And the first time it really hit me was while I was doing Miss Saigon, which is what brought me to the city. I was the original company of Miss Saigon. And you know, it was like coming to New York with a silver spoon in my mouth. I mean, the show was already hit. I got to understudy one of my heroes, Mr. Hinton Battle, who won his third Tony Award playing John. And when he, after he won the Tony, he went down to doing six shows a week, and they gave me two. So here I am, like 25, 26, like starring on Broadway, like, wow. And up until that point, I kept achieving, like, okay, as soon as I get this next job, or this next relationship, or this next opportunity, I'm going to, like, this feeling is going to be soothed, this hole is going to be filled. I remember after the first year of the show, Hinton decided to move on and they gave me the role full time. And I had my first performance, you know, fully as John. And I had a friend in town and you know, we had a celebration, you know, with some of the cast and stuff afterwards. And the next morning I'm fixing breakfast and he's like, what's wrong with you? He said, you don't seem like yourself. You should be happy. Like, this is great. It's what you asked for. I'm like, yeah, I thought so too. I thought, you know, so many other things in my past would be that something that would make things better. And I really thought, okay, this has got to be it. You know, this is an impossible dream coming true. I'm like doing a lead on Broadway. My first Broadway show. I mean, like, who gets that? And he kept asking, what's wrong? And I just burst into tears. I said, my father keeps coming up. I'm gonna tell you, like, at that point, I was like, I want my father to be on my mind like I want a root canal right now, okay? It's like, really? Like, why am I thinking about him? And for the first time in a long time, I sat down and talked about my relationship with my father. And he introduced me to a wonderful therapist, and I started really dealing with my feelings, you know? I forgot that there was ever a time that I wanted my father's attention. I forgot. Somewhere along the way as a kid, I just blanked it out. It's not gonna happen, so, okay, just dismiss it. Pretend it doesn't exist. And I started dealing with the hurt, and the pain, and disappointment. The things that I felt that I could never really name. It was challenging, but one of the many rewards is that it created space for compassion. Compassion for him, compassion for myself. And I remember for the first time ever things that my father said and did for me. I remember my father telling me he loved me. I remember my father telling me he was proud of me. I also discovered that as much as I love my mother, and those of you who know me know I love my mummy, mummy. Mummy, 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 mummy. But I was giving her all the credit. But for the first time, I realized that my father had as big an impact on my life as my mother had, because he showed me what I didn't want to do. I'm not going to be like him, because I had that projected onto me as a kid. You're going to be just like your father, drunk. Going to be short. My father was came to hear. He hated it. He hated being short. And I was like, my father was an example of the life I didn't want. And then, asking about him, I realized, oh my God, he was more than an alcoholic. He had dreams and goals. My father always loved music. I realized how much I like my father. My father was glued to the TV. He loved Star Trek. He loved Westerns. I don't really like Star Trek or Westerns. But he also loved anything having to do with information. I call it geek TV, and that's all I watch. You know, how it was made, how they make marshmallows, how they make seats, you know what I mean? That kind of like crazy stuff. My father loved nature. He always had a stack of National Geographics by his chair. I love nature. It's like, oh my God, I am my father's child. People often ask me, you know, what was your favorite character you played on stage? And they always think it's going to be Mufasa, the Lion King. Of course, Mufasa was great. It was an awesome experience. And people think, okay, maybe it'll be Cold House in Ragtime. Another great role, another great experience. My favorite role so far has been playing Mr. in The Color Purple. And I'll tell you why. It's because, you know, in researching The Color Purple, I went back to the novel, which I never read. And, you know, mystery in the movie is portrayed as like, you know, somebody who's mean and just telling people what to do. And in the book, there's so many times where Mr. is sitting on the porch by himself, just thinking, trying to find his place. And it made me think about my father. It made me think about many of our fathers who have so many things projected onto them. Maybe their parents told them, I don't care what you want to do. You're going to do what I did. You know, women definitely have that. Many children, period. I don't care what creativity is, creativity. No, you're going to be doing X, Y, and Z. I think about how many men were forced into lives they didn't really want. And for black men, you know, around the Color Purple time, coming out of slavery, this new freedom, which wasn't really freedom, a lot of them were lost. And it got me thinking about men in general. Like, where do men go to express themselves, really, to express their hurt and their pain, their aggression? In church, maybe, to pray, the barbershop, to talk stuff, the locker room. The bottle. Now, modern men, you know, we have therapy. We don't have the stigmas attached to therapy anymore, but our fathers and their fathers, they didn't have those advantages. And it gave me compassion for my father and compassion for all men of other generations. And it helped make some of the things that really, really hurt as a kid not seem so personal anymore. If you have a strained relationship with your father or any parent, I encourage you to do what you can to patch it up. I mean, come on, at some point, we become the parents to our parents, right? I mean, technology alone, you know, we're explaining like, this is an iPhone, this is an app, this is how you pay your bills online. I mean, really, we are parenting. And also, when do we reach the point where we stop blaming our parents and start parenting ourselves? I mean, we're all successful adults. We got up, we showered, hopefully we showered. We fed ourselves and we got here. That's success. Careers, all that kind of stuff, that's icing on the cake. But if you can take care of yourself, you are a successful human being. And you've been doing that for a long time, so how appropriate is it to still go, yeah, well, my father didn't hug me enough. My father never told me he loved me. Hug yourself. Tell yourself you love yourself. Validate yourself. I know when I went on that journey with my father, now I have the best relationship with him.
Yay.
Another moment that stands out for me is while I was doing Mufasa, the other M that I played, in The Lion King. We just opened the national tour, the first national, and you know, it took them like 5 years to figure out how to tour Lion King, so the country was starving for it. And that first year, we stopped in Cincinnati. And I remember thinking, what am I going to do in my hometown for 11 weeks? Like, you know, besides like Skyline, Shelly Perkins, pancakes, all my like favorite stuff. What else am I gonna do? I'm there. And the city before that, I was on one of my beautiful nature drives because driving has become a nurturing thing for me. You know, driving through woods and things like that. And it occurred to me, like, I've never had an afternoon with just me and my father. This is after I'd done all this work, and I was like, I want to learn more about him. So I called him when I got home, and I said, hey, you know, the show's going to be in town in about a month. I'd like to set a date for just you and me to go to a diner. We can go wherever you want. We don't even have to talk. I just want to be with you, because I realize I've not had that since I was a kid. My father cleaned buildings, and every once in a while in the summer, he let me come with him. We stopped at White Castle, and he loved their coffee. He did a heavy, heavy, heavy cream, heavy sugar, and he let me have one, and we'd be there with our coffees. We wouldn't be saying anything, but I just love, like, wow, I'm having a bonding something with my father. And we hadn't really had those kind of moments since I was a kid. So, you know, finished in that city, we get to Cincinnati, and which wound up being an amazing 11 weeks. And the day came when I called. He was living with one of my sisters. I said, we want his daddy ready. She goes, he's not going to be able to make it. And I was like, she goes, he's not feeling well. And all this childhood hurt came up. He's rejecting me again. Wow, after all this time. And then I was like, no, I'm not a kid anymore. Wait a minute, that's an old script. I offered. That's a nice thing. He's exercising his free will to do what he wants, but I did a great thing in offering it. And I was like, I'm okay. That's all I can do is offer. A couple of days later, my mother was supposed to come to the show for the 20th time. And she called me and she said, Elton, you know, father's not doing well. He's in the hospital. And can you get rid of my ticket? I'm like, don't worry about it. The show's selling out. Let me sell it. She goes, are you going to come see him? I was like, and I had, my father had been out of, in and out of the hospital for a couple of weeks at that point. I said, you know what? The doctor's telling him not to smoke. He's still smoking. He has emphysema. He's still doing stuff. I don't want to go there and be an enabler. You know, that's his choice. You know, I'll see him at some point. So I go to the theater, and, you know, like I always do, and I'm in my makeup, and I'm underneath the rock because Mufasa rides Pride Rock. Top of the show, and the music starts, and I start getting emotional. I'm like, what is wrong with me? And I start crying. I can barely make it off stage after the Circle of Life. I go to my dressing room, try to gather my nerves. Then I come out to do They Live in You, the song that Mufasa sings to Simba, and I can barely make it through. I'm literally falling apart. And then I went to my dressing room and called my manager, who was the only person who could have convinced me to do this. She goes, Elton. She goes, what's up? I said, something, my father's in the hospital. She goes, leave right now. She's the only person who could convince me, not even my mother, because she had issues with her father. Hung up the phone, more tears, went to stage management, I have to go. I planned to already go after the show. I was just gonna show up. I get to the hospital, and it's my youngest sister and my mother and my father there. My father's like barely alive, like fighting back death. You know, breathing. And my mother goes, Elton. First of all, she's surprised to see me. She goes, the doctor says that he might make it to morning. And instantly I knew, nope, he's gonna die in a few minutes without even knowing. So we, looking at him, we go and sit and talk. And I'm standing where I can see my father. And with just something just happened to turn, and I start seeing the numbers go down, the machines. I said, guys, I think it's time. Very calm. And they're like, what? I'm like, I think it's time. Seconds later, bells and whistles go off. We gather around. People are rushing into the room. doctors, nurses, and my father is still fighting off death, and I grab his hand, and I start struggling it, and I go, let go, it's okay. And I said, Paul White, you were by no means a perfect father, but thank you so much for having me. I am proud to be your son. And he passed away. And I knew instantly that that was why I got so emotional at the theater. He was calling me to him. And he waited for me. And you know, for years I thought, yeah, one day I'll get the call. I'll maybe in Europe or something that, you know, your father passed away. And I'll go, well, yeah. Kept doing what he wanted to do. But having been there for that moment, I can't imagine not having been there. It was the most beautiful thing I ever witnessed. And I'm so glad I'd done the healing work, the forgiveness of him and myself before that moment happened. So if you're in anywhere near a similar situation, be the bigger person, be the more courageous person, and do that work with your parent. Because it's going to wind up being a tremendous gift to yourself. Thank you.
We know that we have all the faith that we need. It's a matter of we're replacing it. So right now, let's just prepare to go to that place deep within, to that place of silence. I pray.
And as we continue in this space, you feel the power and presence that always is moving in and through each of us perfectly. As you allow the seat you are in to support you, or wherever you may be at this moment, together we come knowing truth, sharing our truth, in the midst of it, feeling our feelings, being where we are right now, knowing that it is right and perfect. As we feel the gratitude for being here now, gratitude for having an opportunity to come apart for just a little while. Giving thanks for knowing that as divine creations of spirit, that we are inherently good. Our essence is good. As we just sang, we are love. All God's children. Take that in and allow that to move from head to heart, permeating every cell of our being, allowing the divine love through which we have been created to move through us, to soothe us, to smooth out the rough spaces. Whatever each of us is feeling right now, be in this space, be with it. The safety of love, the safety of community, the gift of allowing ourselves to be. On this amazing day, in this now moment, whatever relationships we've had with our fathers, our single mothers, our father figures, brothers, uncles, godfathers, mentors, teachers, friends, whatever the relationship, in whatever way you can, let us be willing to give thanks for the experiences and the opportunities. And in this space, know that each of us is here. Whether the person on the other side of that relationship is alive in the physical form, or perhaps has moved on, has passed on, or is not present in physical, is not near, let us know the spirit communicates through prayer. And as we hold these individuals in love and light, as we take in the message that we heard earlier about the power of forgiveness, know that it is possible, even if it doesn't feel like. As we become willing to be willing to take one step and allow divine intelligence and divine nature of our Christ essence that is love to allow us to rest in that. And remember that all things are indeed possible. And that the peace that passes all understanding is indeed possible. We take a moment in this silence to allow the love that we are, the love that expresses divinely in and through us, to soothe us, to cherish us, to love us right here and right now. And we breathe into that love in the silence. As we take a breath and know that in a moment we can breathe into the infinite possibilities of making meaning, of adjusting our perceptions and knowing that forgiveness is possible, that it frees us and lets us be more of the divine creation we have come here to be, and we give thanks for truth. We say thank you, sweet spirit, in the name and in the nature of the divine Christ presence in all of us and